Trumos Perek Tes, Mishnah Dalet 9-4. This Mishnah discusses the issue of, in general, when one plants produce that is restricted in some way, what is the status of the new growths that come from those seeds? So we start out with the topic of Truma, because that's been our topic for, of course, the whole Masechta and this Perek also, the growths that come from Truma. And we'll discuss in the first part of the Mishnah the status of those growths, as well as a subsequent generation, meaning the, I'll call it the grandchildren of the original Truma, the wheat kernels you planted. But the Mishnah has two other parts to it. I think here there's so many details, it's just important to get the structure first. So of the three parts of the Mishnah, the first talks about the status of the children and the grandchildren, let's call them, of Truma seeds that you plant. The second part discusses other types of restricted produce, where it goes in being restricted, and the question is what comes out of the ground, new growths, is that restricted or unrestricted, and how? And that second section will be talking specifically about the kinds of things that you plant in the ground that are zaro kale. That means that the seed totally decomposes in the ground before the new growth happens. and for those things, we'll say that the new growths are lenient. They're unrestricted. And the third part of the Mishnah will discuss other types of of restrictions that are applicable to both Zara Kala and Eno Zara Kala, meaning even more lenient yet, we'll say that these restrictions don't persist in the what grows out of the ground from the plants that were restricted, the seeds that were restricted, and that it applies equally to foods, seeds, I should say, that totally decompose, as well as other things, let's say like a bulb, like an onion bulb that you put in the ground, which doesn't decompose. The onion bulb persists, and growth keeps on coming out of that bulb. But even there, in the third section of those restrictions, that list, so those are even more lenient, and we'll say that despite the fact that it didn't totally decompose, still what grows out the ground is unrestricted. So again, part one discusses the children and grandchildren of Truma, and we'll say that is restricted, at least for one generation. The second section will talk about six different types of restrictions where we're going to say that it's not restricted if it's zaro kale, if the seeds decompose, but it would be restricted implicitly, if meaning the Mishnah is not explicit about it in this Mishnah, but it would be restricted if you had planted a bulb, the types of foods that have bulbs. And the third section will say these restrictions are lost from the second generation, whether what you plant are seeds or bulbs. Okay, let's see inside. The Mishnah says, Gedulei Truma Truma. Step one is the granddaddy of this, which is of the whole Perek, which is the rule that second generation Truma is Truma. What I mean by that is this. If you have a Truma seed and you plant in the ground, what comes out of the ground is Truma all over again. Gedulei Truma, the growths from Truma, are still Truma. That, of course, as we said the past three Mishnayos already, is a din derabanan. That notwithstanding, gedule gedulhen, the grandchildren, as opposed to the children, meaning if you take a truma seed, you put that in the ground, what comes out is still truma midrabanan. If you take what came out the ground and put that back in the ground, so then the third generation, we'll call it, is chulin, meaning it's not restricted as truma, it's generic tevel. As I said in the previous Mishnayos, chulin here means as opposed to truma, but of course it's not chulin in that it doesn't need to be tithed. It certainly still doesn't need to be tithed. It does need to be tithed as generic tevel. Okay, now part two of the Mishnah will discuss six different types of restricted foods where if you plant them with seeds in the ground, what comes out is unrestricted. Again, this list is only applicable to seeds, but not bulbs. So we say, aval, however, as opposed to truma, which gedulei truma are still truma, these restricted foods are not restricted. And what are they? Aval tevel, if you plant tevel, I'll explain the whole list afterwards. Let me read the whole sentence. Aval tevel, umaiser rishon, usfiche shvias, utrumas chutzlaretz, vamaduma, vabikurim, geduleyen chulin. For those six things, what comes out of the ground is unrestricted. So the first item on the list is tevel. So tevel means generic untithed food, which of course, what comes out of the ground is tevel also. The difference here is, and this is important to get this Mishnah because we're going to revisit it in subsequent Mishnayos, tevel, you'll recall, is permitted to be eaten without being tithed, derech arai, in a casual way. Achilas arai, if you just snack on something in a non-formal consumption, then one may eat that tevel without tithing it. Once, however, Gemar Melacha has happened, the finishing of the processing of this produce, and as applicable, it's been brought inside the house, then now Achilas Arai, casual eating, snacking, becomes forbidden, and one may only eat this produce, the tevel, after it's been tithed. So let's say you had wheat, which had finished being processed, Gemar Melacha. So now the wheat is tevel wheat, which is restricted because Achilas Arai is now forbidden. Nevertheless, if you plant that wheat in the ground, the Mishnah is saying what comes out of the ground is unrestricted, and one could once again eat that second generation wheat without first tithing it, if he's eating it awry, in a casual, snacky way. The second case is Umaisa Rishon. Maisa Rishon is the first tithe that's given to a Levi. So again, it's not supposed to be, it's restricted to Levium. But let's say you give it to a Levi and he plants it in the ground, so what comes out of the ground is not considered to be Maiser, meaning even a non-Levi could eat it. Next, and in those two cases, by the way, it's worth pointing out, as the Bartanura does, that there is an element of Truma still embedded in those things, meaning Tevel has Truma Gadol to be taken from it still, and Maiser shall has Trumas Maiser to be taken from it. And nevertheless, since that's the minority of the constituents of this of Tevel and Maiser Rishon, the rabbis were lenient and did not apply the rule of Gedulei Truma to these foods, meaning that since it's only a minority Truma embedded inside these foods, the rabbis didn't say that it's restricted when it comes out the ground. The next case here is Sfichei Shvias. You recall from Masechta Shvias, which we just finished, the previous Masechta, that things that are replanted every year, if they grew naturally, they're called svichin. If they just they grew because the wind blew some seeds or something, and the Torah permits one to eat those natural growing foods, like wheat that grew by itself. However, the rabbis forbade it as svichin because people were cheating the system and they were cultivating intentionally and planting, let's say, wheat, and then saying, "Oh, this is just svichin wheat." So svichin are restricted midrabbanan. If one, however, takes svichin wheat and plants in the ground, so then the growths that come out of it are permitted. That's what the Mishnah is saying here. Svichei shvias are not restricted. They're chulin, meaning that although one couldn't eat the svichin, one could plant them and get what comes out the ground is a clean slate. Just worth pointing out here that we're not talking, of course, about planting those svichin, those seeds, on the Shemitah year. That's prohibited all to itself because of the halachas of Shemitah. You can't plant on Shemitah. But if you save those svichin until the eighth year and plant them then, what comes out of the ground is not restricted. The rabbis didn't seem to see fit to restrict it because it's just such an uncommon situation in the first place. And in general, the rabbis did not make Isurei Derabbanan on uncommon, far-out scenarios like svichei shvias. Okay, the fourth item is utrumas chutz la'aretz. So we've said already a few times that outside of Eretz Yisrael, there's a requirement still midrabanan to take truma on the neighboring countries, meaning what's today Jordan, which is Ammon and Moab, as well as what's today Lebanon and Syria, as well as Egypt, Mitzrayim, and Bavel, modern-day Iraq. All those areas are required to be, the produce has to be tithed midrabanan, at least in the time of the Mishnah. And if one took those trumas and planted them, notwithstanding the fact that gedulei truma, that normally there's a din that if you plant truma, as the first part of the Mishnah said, what comes out remains truma. But even this, which is, since this is just midrabanan, the rabbis were lenient and didn't say it should be truma. Now, the Bartanura doesn't say that exactly. The Bartanura says something quite unusual. He says that it's because just like svichei shvias are uncommon, so too trumas chutz la'aretz is also really uncommon. Now, obviously, if you live in Bavel and everything has to be tithed, so in Bavel, truma is not uncommon. It's as common as it is in Eretz Yisrael. It's everything has to be tithed. So many explain that the pshat here is that this whole discussion is only happening in Eretz Yisrael, meaning in Eretz Yisrael, where we treat gedulei truma as truma, and only in Eretz Yisrael, that's how the explanation is. Since it's not very common to find truma that came from chutz la'aretz, the rabbis weren't gozer on it. And so according to that pshat, this whole setup of gedulei truma being truma would only apply in Eretz Yisrael, and we're lenient with truma that came from Chutz La'aretz, because it's just midrabanan and uncommon. The fourth item on the list is Vaha Meduma. Meduma is a mixture, you recall, of chulin and truma together. So again, as we actually saw previously in the Masechta, since Meduma is just midrabanan, still treated as strictures of truma mixed in, but midoraisa, since it's a majority chulin, it's really batal midoraisa, batal merov, and it's chulin midoraisa, we're lenient over here. Again, notwithstanding the fact that there is some truma here, but since it's batal, we will not be strict. I'm reminding you again, in the middle of the section, this section here is talking about these six items on the list, and we just had five so far, are only applying to things that are zaro kale, where the seed totally dissolves in the ground and decomposes. It will not be applicable to onions. So later on we'll see, and we actually saw previously in the Masechta, if you plant meduma onions in the ground, what comes out of the ground remains restricted. Okay, and finally, v'habikurim. The sixth item is bikurim. Those are the first fruits in Eretz Yisrael. If you have any of the seven species by which Eretz Yisrael is praised growing, that's wheat, barley, as well as olives, dates, grapes, figs, and pomegranates. If you have those, what happens is, if you're a farmer, you got a pomegranate tree. When you see your first pomegranates blossoming on the tree, you'll put a little red string around them. And then when they come to maturity, you'll take those first few pomegranates you marked off and bring them to the Beis HaMikdash to be waved over there and given to the Kohanim. The Kohanim will eat them as truma, like truma. As I said in the Hakdamah to the Lama Sechta, there are four things that have truma status: truma gadola, trumas meiser, chala, which is from the dough, and bikurim. Here's bikurim making its appearance. So again, bikurim might be truma-like, and yet we are being lenient and we're saying if one plants that bikurim pomegranate, what grows from it, or one plants that bikurim wheat, what grows from it is going to be unrestricted. Again, the reason why the Bartanura says is because in a mitzuyim, it's just very uncommon to deal with the plantings of bikurim. So the rabbis didn't restrict the second generation offspring of that. Okay, so that's the second section of the Mishnah, those six things where, provided zaro kale, the seeds decompose, what comes out the ground is unrestricted, despite the fact that the original seed was restricted. The third part of the Mishnah now talks about two categories of foods which are restricted, and they are not restricted when they come out the ground in second generation, whether they were zaro kale seeds or even bulbs. And those two things are gedulei hekdesh and meiser sheni. The growths of hekdesh, meaning if you had hekdesh wheat, you had some wheat, you dedicated it to the Beis HaMikdash, you were makdish it, you gave it for bedek habayis, so that the Beis HaMikdash should have an asset it could monetize. If those seeds got planted in the ground, what comes out of the ground is unrestricted. And same goes for meiser sheni, that is the second tithe you're supposed to eat in Yerushalayim. But if you plant them in the ground instead, what comes out the ground is unrestricted. It can be eaten in even outside of Yerushalayim. Now, I made a bit of a mistake, I have to confess here, when I started this Mishnah, but I'm going to pick up the pieces right now. I had said a couple times in the first few Mishnahs of the Perek that when I get to the fourth Mishnah, which here we are, I would explain more fully the rationale behind the Din D'Rabbanan of Gedulei Truma Truma. Let me now explain that, which will also be useful in understanding why it doesn't apply here at all to Gedulei Hekdesh and Meiser Sheni. There's a famous Gemara in the second parak of Maseches Shabbos that talks about how one time Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai went to go visit a certain person who was in an attic. The exact scenario there is a bit of a machlokas for Shalom, it doesn't matter. He was up in the attic, they went to visit him, he was doing something, and they discovered that although they had a quorum, like a Sanhedrin, to Paskin, it turned out that, sort of like a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, they had a quorum, and yet the majority of the members present in that collection of people were from Beis Shammai. So Beis Shammai took the opportunity to bring up and enact 18 different Durabanans that I guess had been longtime hobby horses of Beis Shammai, but they just couldn't kind of pass them through legislation because the majority of the Sanhedrin was Beis Hillel. And those 18 enactments became like these famous 18. On Daf Yud Zayin of Maseches Shabbos, we have one of the 18 being that Gedulei Truma Truma, that if one plants Truma, what comes out is Truma, the topic of our whole parak over here. So all pretty much all of the 18 had to do with Tumah and Tahara issues, pretty much all. And this is one of those also. So here was the rationale of Beis Shammai. Beis Shammai was afraid that a Kohen who got Truma, let's say wheat kernels, who's supposed to eat those wheat kernels, if those wheat became tame, so then he no longer could eat them. And his only option would be to burn them. He has to destroy them. He can't eat them anymore. But he could have a plan B. He could take those wheat kernels, put them in the ground, and then grow a whole new wheat crop. And the wheat crop would be a clean slate, would be chulin, wouldn't have any restrictions of truma. So that would work. The problem is that Beis Shammai was afraid that if a Kohen would retain tame wheat kernels in his house until the time to plant comes around, and you can only plant once a year in the planting season, you know, around Tishrei, so he would inadvertently come to eat those wheat kernels. Remember, the houses were small, wheat is not just seed but food, and you're living with, you know, with forbidden food in your kitchen the whole year long, it's a disaster waiting to happen. So Beis Shammai said, if we make it that there's no economic incentive for people to retain their wheat that became tame as truma, then they won't retain it. They'll just get rid of it, and then that will avert the inadvertent consumption of tame truma wheat. So what do? They said, listen, if you plant your truma, then what comes out the ground remains truma. And that totally undercut any, you know, economic justification for retaining your wheat kernels, because as we've said a few times already, the going rate for wheat when it's truma is just a tiny fraction of the going weight of wheat when it's chulin, because only kohanim can eat the wheat if it's truma, and even only a tahor kohen could eat that wheat because it's truma. So no kohen in his right mind, if he owned a field, would use that field to cultivate truma wheat, which is really sort of economically inferior. So that was the plan, and that's what's really driving this whole perek. So the legislation came through when they voted and found themselves in the majority, and Beis Shammai did, and Beis Hillel saw that it was appropriate to keep it that way, and then certainly they did not overrule those 18 in the next time that they convened the Sanhedrin and found themselves, Beis Hillel found themselves back in the majority. So that sticks around as being, those 18 stick around as being halacha lemaisa, basically. And this is one of those. So back to our Mishnah over here. When it comes to the last part here, Gedulei Hekdesh and Maaser Sheni, the growths from Hekdesh, produce you gave to the Beis Hamikdash, as well as a Maaser Sheni that you're supposed to eat in Yerushalayim. So here, there's no real reason in the first place why a person would plant those seeds as opposed to give them to the Beis Hamikdash, or as opposed to eat them in Yerushalayim. First of all, they're his. No one told him he had to be makdish in the first place. Second of all, if he's going to, so he could always, if he wanted those particular seeds for some reason, he could always just redeem them. He could just buy them back. And the same with the Maaser Sheni. So this is his produce, and he has to eat in Yerushalayim. If he plants in the ground, so good, he sidestepped going to Yerushalayim, but he could always just redeem them on coins anyways, and then he could not have the problem. So that being the case, the Mishnah says,